Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, the Speaker of the Nevada Assembly, Jason Frierson, for the whole show on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Nevada Newsmakers tapings in Las Vegas are brought to you by the Las Vegas Metro Chamber of Commerce.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
Pro Group Management offers workers' comp services to a growing number of industries. As businesses grow and change with the times, the need for a solid workers' comp program must be flexible and up to date. The evolving nature of regulations can make staying ahead of complex tasks challenging. But Pro Group Management simplifies the work so your industry can move forward and succeed. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you.
Truck drivers are some of the hardest working people you'll meet, delivering over 70% of America's freight and 92% of Nevada's. When there's a natural disaster, they're delivering critical supplies to help those communities recover and rebuild. Every sector of the economy and our nation's military rely on truck drivers. So let's take a moment to say thank you. On the open road or city streets, our truck drivers are rolling to make our economy and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shad, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, coming to you from the Las Vegas Metro Chamber here in Symphony Park in downtown Las Vegas. We are delighted to welcome back to the program the Speaker of the Nevada Assembly, Jason Frierson. Pleasure to have you back on the program,
sir. Oh, it's great to be back. Thank you.
Thank you. So you now have a supermajority in the Assembly. That's got to make you a pretty happy guy.
We had a good result from the election. It doesn't, I think, remove our responsibility to govern responsibly, but we feel good about the effort, and I think we had some great candidates that worked really, really hard.
And when you say govern responsibly, what do you mean exactly by that?
Well, I think the fact that we have two seats over what we need in order to have a supermajority doesn't mean that we have to go crazy and burn the building down. I think we have a responsibility, whether we have 29 or 22, to govern in a way that I think reflects Nevada values and moves the state forward. It's certainly a nice cushion to have for some social policy to be able to advance what we think is an agenda that helps Nevada families. But it doesn't remove the need for us to be responsible and be statesmen about it.
And that's great to hear you say that, especially the statesmanship part. Harry Reid learned that even when you have 60 votes in the United States Senate, that there are going to be people within your own caucus who are going to negotiate with you when it comes to major issues. So, I mean, obviously you're aware of that.
Right.
Do you think there's any danger in having control of the governorship and both houses?
Well, I think there's always danger in power, whether it's a supermajority or not. This is the first time in a long time that our party has been in control of both houses and the executive. So whether it's a supermajority or not, I think it can bring challenges. It can create factions if you let it. And I think if we lead in a way that makes everybody feel part of the process and understands where we're trying to go, I think you minimize it. But we'll take it as it comes.
It was interesting to see one of your friends and mentors, former Speaker Barbara Buckley, pointed to the transition committee along with Dina Titus and Hillary Sheevy. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that it's important that we put forth some efforts to collaborate to have a great team to transition. I know that the governor-elect and Governor Sandoval have been talking and working together about transition, and I think we have a lot of work ahead of us. And I'm confident that Steve Sisolak will invest the time and energy to make sure that he has some good folks in place to help him transition into governing.
And, you know, one of the things that you're going to need to help him with, and a lot of other people are going to need to help him with, is it's a lot different being the chairman of the Clark County Commission to being the governor. Can you lay out for us some thoughts on that?
Well, it is different. I think we are going to be partners in having an opportunity to lead in both the executive and the legislative branches. It's obviously a lot more bodies, a lot more cats to herd. A larger volume, at least during session, of policy issues. So it's going to be important that we communicate openly and regularly to stay on the same page and you know, try to be as effective as we can.
So lay out for me some of your policy ideas. Do you think that there's going to be a lot of stuff that that was vetoed in the last session that's going to be brought back for consideration? And if so, what areas do you think will be the most likely?
Well, as a leader, I think it's my responsibility to look forward. We worked through last session. We made some advances. Some were successful and some were not. But I don't want to look backwards. I want to look forward. We have an opportunity to work with both houses and with the executive. And quite frankly, I still think that we have an opportunity to lead in a bipartisan way on a lot of issues. When you start to talk about vetoes before sessions even started, I think that's the wrong tone. There's very little that we couldn't revisit and, quite frankly, give new legislators an opportunity to participate in discussion, make adjustments to make any ideas we had from last session even better. And I think we should take advantage of that opportunity. I see no need to rush with respect to any of that when we have the ability to move good policy with the government that we have moving forward.
I remember two sessions ago, and that would have been, what, your first session, correct?
Well, two sessions ago, I was on sabbatical. I was home.
Oh, okay. But two sessions ago, I remember getting a phone call from a lobbyist saying, because we were planning to be down there 3 months while there was 3 months left in the session, mm-hmm. instead of 4 months, and I got a call after the first week saying, there is so much stuff going on down here, you better get down here right away. And we were there for the whole 4 months,
right.
as we were last session.
Right.
Do you anticipate this legislative session just getting off to a running start?
Well, I think two sessions ago there was a lot going on because there was a lot of dysfunction in the institution, quite frankly. I don't intend on that being what happens in 2019. We have a lot of work to do. I think we have an opportunity to work together to do it. It will be a busy session, but I'm looking forward to a productive session. Some complicated issues when you're talking about healthcare, public education. I think there's some you know, renewable energy. There's some really important and complicated issues that we have to look to tackle. And I think it's more important than ever that we work together to try to tackle those issues.
Okay, so let's go through a couple of those. Let's start with healthcare.
Yep.
What's your number one priority as far as healthcare is concerned?
Well, I think, you know, we had an idea we ran through the Committee on Healthcare, Health and Human Services, that gave the states an option in Medicare. And so I think that we got a late start on that issue last session with really being able to vet it. And I think other states have started to act in providing a state version of Medicare. And I think we have an opportunity to revisit legislation from last session and fine tune it and see if it's something palatable for us to be able to provide health care for every Nevadan if possible.
Have you looked at the cost of that at this point in time?
Yeah, well, we have. And that's part of the conversation and part of what needs to be adjusted and tweaked to see if there's going to be resources to be able to do it and what those resources are. If we're talking about expanding it, and it might not necessarily be available to everyone, but expanding the coverage options, these are things that we need to have fruitful conversations about and see what's on the table, what we can afford. But we certainly have to live with our means. We just have to have a better idea of what we can afford and then go from there.
Okay, so what populations would you see if you were looking at expanding? Because a couple of other states have looked at Medicare for All, and mm-hmm. it was just too expensive.
Right.
So what areas would you like to move into initially that would make the most sense?
Well, you know, I think it's premature to go into the weeds on it. I think we have to have stakeholders at the table to talk about those priorities. We have to get the economic forum numbers to find out what we have to work with. I think we'll have a better idea of what should and could be on the table once we have a better idea of what we have to work with.
Mike Wilden, the governor's chief of staff and longtime head of Health and Human Services, very well respected, said that even though there will be more money available, but the roll-ups, the cost increases, will account for most of that. Do you share that view?
I do. I have concerns. I think that there's going to be limited resources to accomplish what we want. Look, my chairman, Mike Sprinkle, for Health and Human Consumer Services has done an outstanding job of at least trying to bring everybody to the table to shepherd the conversation. And I think we still have to take advantage of those discussions and see where we can find common ground. And again, once we have the economic forum numbers, we can have a better idea of what we can afford.
All right, let's take a break. More with the Speaker of the Nevada Assembly, Jason Frierson, right after this.
Tamarack Junction is South Reno's hotspot with over 450 of the latest slots and video games. Sully's Sports Bar, the Dining Car Restaurant, William Hill Sportsbook, and the Tamarack Steakhouse and Lounge. We're just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
Yeah.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things. Like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
Hi, I'm Eric Robnett, owner of Home Energy Experts. Has this ever happened to you?
Honey, did you remember to turn down the thermostat?
Forgetting to set the temperature? Not fun. We can help. Our new smart thermostat keeps the temperature set for your comfort all by itself.
I'm feeling hot now.
To increase your comfort, go to homeenergyexperts.com for details. That's homeenergyexperts.com.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
The Tamarack Junction Steakhouse is known for signature steaks, handcrafted cocktails, and world-class wines. Join us Thursdays and Friday nights from 4:30 to 6:30 in the Steakhouse Lounge for live music, gourmet plates, and well-priced wines just north of the Summit Mall on South Virginia.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we are thrilled to have the Speaker of the Nevada Assembly, Jason Frierson, with us as we record here at the Las Vegas Metro Chamber. Education obviously was a major part of campaign discussion. The governor-elect talking about wanting to put $500 million into education additionally. We've also had the head of the teachers union looking at saying on this program that we need $1 billion in terms of education. What are your thoughts in terms of money, but really more where those resources should go?
Right. The economic forum will give us a better idea of the kind of resources that we have. Assuming we don't have a large increase in revenue, we do have to be responsible with the resources that we have. So I think we need to look at the Nevada plan. We need to make sure that we make adjustments that are timely. This is an old plan that hasn't been tweaked, and I think we need to look at ways to adjust it to make sure that our resources are hitting the classroom. I think that the governor-elect and I agree that we need to pay our teachers better. That's not an antidote. That's just not the end-all, be-all. But we shouldn't have teachers digging in their own pockets just to do their jobs. And so I think we have to do better by our children, by our teachers, to pay them more. And I think, you know, we also have, you know, the marijuana tax money that there's a misconception that it is not going to education. It is going to education. But because of political maneuvering last session, we had to do it in a roundabout way. So I'm looking forward to an opportunity to make it much more clear that this money is going straight to education and at a time where we don't have to go through that maneuvering. And I think that, you know, those are some of the things that we have to do to strengthen our system before we even look at new revenue. But some of this is going to require some new revenue if we can identify some.
So as you look at the state rather than just, you know, specific areas, mm-hmm. The numbers are not great for education. But if you look at Washoe County, for example, and Eureka County, I believe even Elko County, the numbers are much better in Southern Nevada, and there are obvious reasons. It's a transient community, a lot of people working, in the gaming industry and other industries where there are service jobs, so people may have to work two jobs to be able to survive. you know, it makes it a much tougher situation. So are you looking to put more money into Southern Nevada? Because that appears to be where the need is greatest to be able to boost those numbers.
Well, the reality is we have a constitutional mandate to fund education for every child statewide. And the way the Nevada plan operates right now, the state is not the primary funder of education. Local governments are. And then the state steps in to backfill what local governments have not been able to fund. And so that makes it difficult. But I believe that there are constitutional limitations on our ability to fund only regionally in the state. So we have to be mindful of that. But ultimately, we're leaders for the whole state, and we have to make sure that children throughout the state have an adequate public education system. So, you know, there's some challenges to finding ways to take advantage of local resources that are greater to benefit local kids, but also make sure that we're not shortchanging children throughout the state. And those are things that we're going to continue to work on as we adjust the Nevada plan to make sure that every child has access to quality public education.
As you look at the economic forum numbers, and obviously when those numbers come out, everybody is going to say, oh, well, you know, that's my pet project.
Right.
But how far would you like to see an increase, if it was possible, in per pupil funding?
Well, I would like for us to move towards a national average in per pupil spending. That's a big move. I think we also can, in adjusting the Nevada plan, adjust it in a way that better reflects what we actually are in investing in our children. I believe that we invest more than what it appears based on the Nevada plan, and I think there's some adjustments that could be made to make sure that money that goes into the DSA better reflects what we actually do invest, and then we can start to talk about how to use those resources more efficiently and possibly increase support if we can identify new revenue sources.
The marijuana tax is coming in much stronger than
right.
was originally anticipated. Some of that money is going to the Rainy Day Fund. Do you want to continue to see that money being split between education and the Rainy Day Fund?
No, I think that the will of the people is that money would go towards education, and it should. The way that we conduct a state budget for a two-year biennium is we base it on the estimate. Well, it came in higher than the estimate, and so as we move forward next interim, we're going to have to base it on the estimate. Presumably, that'll be more, but I think that's just the way that a part-time legislature works, and we do the best we can, considering we meet once every 2 years. To estimate how much we're going to bring in. I do support creating a rainy day fund specifically for education. I think, you know, there are years where we have surpluses based on what we estimated. There are other years where we have shortfalls. But had we had a rainy day fund 30 years ago, we would be well situated to weather any economic downturn. So I think that it's a responsible thing to do to create a rainy day fund specifically for education. But you can't put money away until you pay your basic needs. And so before we start putting money in a savings account, we need to make sure that our teachers are paid, that we have reasonable class sizes, and that we're giving the children the tools they need in the classroom to be successful.
All right, let's take a break, and we'll be back with the Speaker of the Nevada Assembly after this.
Nevada Newsmakers tapings in Las Vegas are brought to you by the Las Vegas Metro Chamber of Commerce.
Dimitri Prine here for Design Outdoor. Come visit Design Outdoor's store and backyard to see our wide selection of fire pits, barbecues, and pizza ovens, natural stone water features and fountains, and frostproof pottery. Our store and backyard are located at 11600 South Virginia, just north of DeMonte Ranch Parkway. Visit designoutdoor.com or call us at 851-9499.
I can't do it. Stupid, like my mom.
We can't do anything at Mommy's because you won't pay child support.
Dad said you cheated, and he's not even sure he's my dad.
Mommy said you left both of us, so she isn't gonna let me see you.
I look just like my father.
I'm divorce attorney Marilyn York, and I may represent men, but hate has no gender, only casualties. Please, stop sacrificing your children in your war against your ex.
Hi, I'm Dave Newman. Remember me? I used to be the house detective, and now I'm a realtor, full-time at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates. A lot of people ask me, how's the market? You know what? It's fantastic. If you're even kicking around the idea of buying or selling, give me a call. Let's talk about it. Call me at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates and just ask for the guy who used to be the house detective. Dave Newman.
Everyone is talking about opioids, but they're not the only drugs that can be harmful if taken in large quantities or not as prescribed. You also need to be aware of side effects from anxiety drugs, muscle relaxants, sleep aids, and stimulants. Mixing prescription drugs with other drugs or alcohol can be dangerous. If you take Ambien with a glass of wine, it may be enough to stop you from breathing. Prescribed drugs can be just as dangerous as illegal drugs. Take medications only as directed.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with the Speaker of the Nevada Assembly, Jason Frierson. So let's hit some more topics here. The public spoke very loudly in wanting to maintain NV Energy as the monopoly energy company, but they also talked very loudly about wanting to move forward with renewable energy. And there's been a lot of conversation since that vote on question six that the legislature wants to move even quicker than the public having to vote on it again. So what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, we support increasing the RPS, renewable portfolio standard. We passed legislation last session that was actually lower. I think it was 40%. And I think what passed by the people is 50%. I think with the abundant sun that we have and the options that we have for renewable energy, I think we can meet either of those. And I believe that we are certainly interested in advancing that cause.
Do you have any concerns about the cost of natural gas versus renewables at this point in time, or do you think that that's going to even out over the next few years?
Well, I mean, I think there's always concern about cost. I think question three failed because of concerns about the impact on the ratepayer. So
and $63 million.
Right. Right. That helped. So I think that there's always going to be that kind of concern. I don't believe that. You know, a 40-50% RPS is going to do more than fit what I think the trajectory that we're currently on already. So I'm looking forward to us being able to broaden and expand the use of renewables, and I think the voters have spoken about their interest in doing it as well.
When you look at California, and they're talking about probably at some point going for 100% renewables, mm-hmm. Do you think that's realistic?
Well, and I don't think it's realistic in Nevada yet. I think that we have an opportunity to grow in that direction. I also think there's a lot of advances in technology when we're starting to talk about battery storage and the opportunity for every household to potentially have storage as opposed to generating energy and putting it on the grid. I think, you know, we are looking at the beginnings of some interesting advancements in technology, and we need to be ready to embrace that technology.
Criminal justice reform is something that I know that you're interested in. What specifically, or how would that look?
Well, you know, there are recommendations coming out of the Advisory Commission on the Administration of Justice that convened throughout the interim. We were fortunate to have over $1 million invested by the Justice Reinvestment folks to look at our current criminal justice system and make recommendations. I think what's important is that we protect the community from danger, but that we're also responsible and creative with offenders that come from a non-violent or non-sexual offense status. And so it will likely cost more money to incarcerate somebody who has a drug problem than to wrap them in services and try to help rehabilitate them so that they can get off drugs and become productive members of society. So we're looking at the number of non-violent folks that we have currently incarcerated that we're spending money on to house as opposed to rehabilitate. I think we certainly have looked at the fact that we legalized recreational marijuana, but there are people that are incarcerated based on behavior that's now legal. So we have to look, I think, system-wide to be more responsible with it, and also recognize that we provide a savings to the community if we come at it from a rehabilitative perspective.
Are you also looking potentially to expunge people's records that were convicted of marijuana convictions?
That's certainly something that we've looked at. We looked at last session. The reality is it was a crime when it occurred, and so I think that we have to frame this conversation in terms of practical reality, not one that suggests that it was not a crime when it occurred. It was, but again, this is about being fiscally responsible. It's worked in other states on a bipartisan level in Texas and Kentucky and several other states. It's worked to save money and better protect the community. So I think that we have a responsibility to consider those options.
Yeah, and I have to throw in, and just playing devil's advocate here, that, you know, if you look at the war on drugs, and the origins of it back in the Nixon administration, one would have to say that there are concerns about people who were convicted, and the reasons that they were convicted had a lot to do with being felons and therefore not having voting rights.
Right.
And that affected disproportionately African Americans and Hispanics.
Right.
And so it would seem to me that would be something that the legislature would definitely want to look at in terms of fairness.
Absolutely, and we looked at voting rights restoration and made some advances last session except for the most serious felonies, allowing them to automatically have their rights to vote restored. What better way to integrate somebody back into society than to give them an opportunity to fully participate? That legislation becomes effective next year, so we're looking forward to inviting more people to participate in the democratic process, and I think you're absolutely right. That was It served to disenfranchise such large numbers of people that had no reason to buy into societal norms unless we give them the opportunity to fully participate.
We got about 30 seconds left, and if you can just quickly give me an idea of, you were saying off air that you want to do more with small business.
Right.
Just give us a brief idea of what that is, and then next time you come on, we'll talk
sure.
more about it.
I just think we have a responsibility to make sure that Nevada maintains a productive and positive atmosphere for small businesses to flourish and thrive. I think we have to work on our relationships in the community to make sure that we work with our partners to keep going and moving forward and expanding opportunity for small businesses.
And that's where we have to leave it. Mr. Speaker, thank you so much for doing this.
Absolutely.
We look forward to seeing you in Carson City.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll be right back. A bird's eye captures its surroundings at different heights. At Brian Culpa Photography, we can make your imagination soar over buildings, parks, cityscapes, and beyond. Brian's images tell the story and get the job done. If you need a new perspective to tell your story, contact Brian today. Brian Culpa Photography. Experience the bird's eye view at brianculpaphotography.com.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion, for romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in Northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
Take a look at Pro Group Management and see how your workers' comp requirements can be met head-on. By taking a proactive approach, Pro Group can assure that your company is meeting or exceeding state and federal standards. As you move forward in your industry, Pro Group moves with you, simplifying regulatory tasks, clearing the way so you can get the job done, and look to your future success. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you.
As always, you can watch Nevada Newsmakers 24 hours a day at NevadaNewsmakers.com. You can also download podcasts of the show free of charge or watch us on YouTube. We'll see you on the next broadcast.